mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a huge honor for 50 North. Executive Director Carolyn Kopis explains what it means to be named Ohio's Senior Center of the Year, for them and for the members of the community they serve. Also this morning, if you're waking up to another week without a job, it's probably little comfort to hear that February's Labor Department data shows more openings for work and plenty of opportunities for those who want to find employment. How to stay positive during an extended job search. And we'll get an update on Hancock County 4-H programs from the OSU Extension. And a reminder, there's still time to sign up. Lauren Berner Kitzler will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, March 11th, 2024. Big weekend in college basketball over the weekend. We had the women's basketball tournaments, major conference tournaments. There were a few men's games as well, but it was the women that getting all the attention this week in the conference tournaments. Iowa had to stage a furious comeback to win the Big Ten title over Nebraska. And the big story over the weekend, did you see the bench-clearing brawl? Well, it wasn't really a brawl, cleared the benches confrontation between LSU and South Carolina in the SEC tournament championship game. It happened when it was like 2 minutes left in the game when LSU was called for an intentional foul against South Carolina. The Gamecocks stole the ball, and the LSU player went back and intentionally fouled to prevent the breakaway basket. LSU was trailing, and so they couldn't afford to, with 2 minutes left, give two free points to South Carolina. It was a basketball thing. That's what, of course, South Carolina and their players took exception to it. There was some pushing and shoving, benches cleared, and that's what got everybody tossed. I mean, literally, the entire benches for both LSU and South Carolina, because they left the bench area to participate in the confrontation, they all got sent off. The only South Carolina had one sub because there was a sub checked in at the scorer's table to come into the game. So outside of the one sub, everybody else, and they played the last 2 minutes, LSU with no subs and South Carolina with one sub. South Carolina went on to win 79-72. And at one point, it was kind of interesting, there was a fan that jumped the table onto the court from the stands. Turns out it was the brother of one of the LSU players, and he is now under arrest for entering the court during that, I don't want to say brawl. I mean, it's being described as a brawl, but there weren't punches. There was some pushing and shoving, but there weren't really punches thrown. It was more a confrontation. But in any event, it was the brother of Flauje Johnson from LSU, and he is now under arrest, escorted off the court in handcuffs by police. And it was quite the sight. If you haven't seen the video, go back and watch it. It was about 20 minutes to sort the whole thing out and resume play the end of that game. So I guess the women's game is catching up to the men's game all the way around. Even in the confrontations, it was like shades of the old Detroit Pistons and Indiana Pacers and Malice at the Palace, all of that. The other big sports story over the weekend, apparently the Steelers have found their new quarterback. ESPN is reporting Russell Wilson, ex of the Seattle Seahawks and more recently the Denver Broncos. Russell Wilson plans to sign with Pittsburgh when the new league year begins on Wednesday. Apparently, he will sign a team-friendly deal, it says here, after the Broncos released him last week. Denver is on the hook for $38 million of Russell Wilson's salary next season. So with a team that he's not playing for paying him $38 million, you can sign a team-friendly deal with the Steelers. Obviously, that sends Kenny Pickett to the bench. Mitchell Trubisky and Mason Rudolph's future with the team is now in question. So we'll see. Wilson actually had a decent year last year, 3,000 passing yards, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Not good enough for the Broncos, but the Steelers said, yeah, we'll take you. So we'll see how that goes. That's one of the big stories of the day. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories. Get your Monday morning started. Did you remember to spring ahead before you hit the sack on Saturday night? I have to admit that I forgot. I forgot to set my clock ahead. And I know a lot of people use their phones, you know, as their alarm clock in the morning. I don't do that. I still have an alarm clock by the side of me because I'm old. And so I still have an actual alarm clock, and I forgot to set it ahead on Saturday night. I rolled over on Sunday morning, and I suddenly realized, ooh, it's an hour later than that clock says. So I was, yeah. Who likes spring ahead more than anyone? Golf courses, one of the biggest benefactors of the extra hour of daylight shifted to the evening hours. They make big bucks. William Willett argued for daylight saving time in the 1900s because he wanted more daytime to play golf. And the golfing industry is a longtime supporter of the concept. In fact, in the 1980s, it says here, I did not know this. In the 1980s, lobbyists estimated that the golfing industry would make $200 million more if we extended daylight saving time by 1 month. And since the 1980s, daylight saving time actually has been extended. I don't know if it's 1 month or exactly how much it is, but it's longer now than it used to be. From an economic standpoint, says the CEO, former CEO of the World Golf Foundation, Steve Mona, from an economic standpoint, golf on a national level creates almost $70 billion a year in economic impact, and daylight saving, a big boon to golf courses. That's kind of interesting. But I guess it's not a big surprise. I know one industry that doesn't necessarily care for the extended daylight at the end of the hour, end of the day, drive-in movie theaters, drive-ins, because they can't start the movies until it gets dark out. And in the warmer weather months, when people go to the drive-in, it means the film doesn't even start until, you know, 9:30 sometimes. But anyway, golf courses, and there are other businesses as well. But golf courses is one of the companies that, one of the industries that really likes daylight saving time. I hadn't really thought about that. Of course, the Oscars handed out last night, the Academy Awards ceremony. And it's not just the folks whose names were announced that were the big winners. Really, anyone nominated for an Oscar scored pretty well. Have you heard about this? The company Distinctive Assets has once again compiled a trove of goodies for this year's Oscar nominees. The goodie bags, the infamous goodie bags, this year total $178,000 in value. Some of the stuff in the goodie bags this year for all of the Oscar nominees. It's a free-for-all. Let's see here. Samples of Poppy, which is a new low-calorie prebiotic soda worth around $9. Okay, so that's... But then they go all the way up. The gifts go all the way up to a three-night private stay at a Swiss ski chalet for as many as 9 guests plus the nominee. So 10 guests total. a three-night private stay at a Swiss chalet worth around $50,000. There's also a $25,000 private show by the Mentalist to the Stars, Carl Christman, and a microneedling session. It's like an acupuncture session from the company Cynosure, worth about $10,000. Now, one interesting point about the Oscar goodie bags, the IRS views the value of the gift bags as taxable income. So any of those things that you use, you have to pay taxes on. So the more goodies that the nominees accept and actually take advantage of, the more Uncle Sam will take a bite. And it is probably for this reason, CNBC notes that in all of the years, they've been giving goodie bags to the Oscar nominees, and they've been doing this for like 20, 30 years now. In all of the years they've done this, nobody has ever redeemed all of the gifts from the goodie bags. They'll take advantage of some of them, and I would imagine that there will be a few that will take them up on that three-night private stay at the Swiss Chalet. But you know, some of the other ones, they'll just will go unclaimed. Kind of interesting. And finally, on the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, here's something nice. It seems that we in the Midwest are the nicest people in America, especially when it comes to work-life balance. This is a good story to know on a Monday morning. New survey commissioned by Coworking Cafe evaluated 100 cities with populations of 200,000 or more and found that of all of the cities with the best work-life balance, the Midwest is the best place to be. Minneapolis, Minnesota was number one overall with the best work-life balance. St. Paul, Minnesota came in second place. And Nebraska has two cities in the top 10, Lincoln at number 3 and Omaha at number 9. The rest of the top 10 include Madison, Wisconsin, Raleigh, North Carolina, Columbus, Ohio at number 6, just outside of the top 5, Irvine, California, Chesapeake, Virginia, and Des Moines, Iowa. Dr. J. Gerald Suarez at the University of Maryland says, quote, "Since the pandemic, we have seen an attitudinal shift and an increased focus on work-life balance. This momentum stems from the workforce seeking fulfilling, holistic experiences and demanding more autonomy." And the Midwest is leading the way. So aren't you glad you live in the Midwest? The worst place to be would be in the Northeast. Still notorious for long working hours and a lack of work-life balance, Jersey City, Newark, Baltimore, and New York City ranked particularly low on the list. So, be glad that you live where you do is the bottom line. Pretty cool. Columbus being number 6 on that list. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected today. A high in the mid-50s. Partly cloudy tonight. A low around 40. 50 North has been honored as the Senior Center of the Year in Ohio by the Ohio Association of Senior Centers. Executive Director Carolyn Kopis.
We're just happy to be able to share this news with the citizens of Hancock County who support the Senior Center by their levy dollars that they approve to be able to provide the programs and services that we do to Hancock County.
She says 50 North has served Hancock County since 1970, supporting seniors with the resources and opportunities they need to live with health and purpose. Learn more about the award and 50 North in this story on our website. A bill at the Ohio State House could help law enforcement agencies offset costs as they retire drug-sniffing dogs.
Marijuana, as you know, is now legal in Ohio after Issue 2 passed for its recreational usage. And about 400 dogs across the state cannot unlearn the smell, so they have to retire. This means agencies will have to get new drug-sniffing dogs. The proposed legislation would give agencies up to $20,000 per dog to lower the cost of acquiring training and equipping them. The House is in session again next month. I'm Tracy Townsend.
March is National Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month, and Blanchard Valley Center, the Hancock County Board of Developmental Disabilities, is hosting several activities so everyone in Hancock County can help celebrate.
Join us in building awareness and help us celebrate inclusion in Hancock County. A few fun ways we're celebrating include an Inclusion Spirit Week, March 11th through the 15th, where we hope to see schools and businesses participate.
And BBC's Nadine Weininger says the celebrity basketball game is coming up later this month. See the full list of activities in this story on our website. The Hancock County Engineer's Office is letting drivers know about a road closure this week. They say Union Township Road 56 between Union Township Road 25 and Hancock County Road 313 will be closed this week for pipeline repair work. Get more on the closure and the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, a big, big honor for 50 North last week being named Ohio's Senior Center of the Year. Executive Director Carolyn Kopas is with us this morning to talk more about what it means for them and for the members of the community that they serve. And Carolyn, first of all, congratulations. Thanks very much for dropping by. Good to see you.
Thanks,
Chris. As always. So first of all, kind of talk a little bit about the criteria for this. I mean, I'm assuming they don't just draw a name out of the hat. What does this speak to what you do at 50 North that sets you apart from other senior centers around the state?
So first of all, I want to say that if you've gone to one senior center in Ohio, you've only gone to one senior center in Ohio.
Yeah.
And not only do I want to thank Ohio Association of Senior Center for recognizing the work our board of directors, our staff and volunteers do for our members on a daily basis. But I also want to thank the community and the county, because if it weren't for their generosity in supporting daily what we do, mm-hmm. we couldn't provide all the services and programs that we do.
Yeah.
So thank you, Hancock County, for allowing us to build a gem for this county.
Yeah. Speaking of which, for the benefit of those who do not have that day-to-day contact with 50 North, maybe they're younger or what have you, what is it that you do? I mean, I think that among some, there might be a perception that you exist simply to help old folks keep busy.
So we realized how our mission is to enrich lives and support independence. Mm-hmm. We enrich lives, which we found out during COVID, how important socialization is and how detrimental isolation is to our heart.
Absolutely.
Or to our health and our heart.
You're right.
And so we have activities and programs that we do, and there's a wide range of activities, whether it's going to be an arts craft, a performing arts, sewing. You could also come and hear a lecture on current trends or historical, a book club, mm-hmm. anything, safety. We just have the Attorney General in talking about scams, because
right.
senior scams are a big thing.
Right.
We also provide a cafe so people can come and eat and enjoy a good meal, mm-hmm. and as well as wellness, which is a program that we really, it is for all people, but we really work on chronic conditions. Our second part of our mission is to support independence. We do that through our mobile meals. We also do that through our social workers providing services and referrals to help people transition from work to retirement, from good, you know, good health to chronic conditions to independence needing some help. We also have a chore department, and they're really busy right now putting in ramps because we want to support people to keep them in their house safely, mm-hmm. grab bars.
Right.
But we also do those day-to-day things they can't do anymore, like climb on a ladder and change a light bulb, mm-hmm. or go out and pick up those sticks and their landscaping and mowing. So there's so much, and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Over the years, programming and the services that you do and so on have evolved. I mean, you think 50 North, you know, what is it, 50, you know, 70 is the new 50 or whatever. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, 50 doesn't seem that old. I'm 50. I don't feel old, don't feel like a senior. So over the years, you kind of evolve to match that mindset.
We did. And when you look at the benchmark or the what AARP did, you start receiving that at 49.
Right.
There are a lot of people out there that are civil servants, who are teachers, and even industries in Findlay. And people came to us, if you're that transition mm-hmm. from work to retirement, I'm 51 and I can't come. So we took that in 2015 and reduce the age to 50 because we were listening to the community and people. Mm-hmm. And everything that we have done has been intentional. We work with Dan Gunner with Insights, and that organization has been pivotal in helping us be what we are today. Annually, we put strategic initiatives together, and those initiatives, starting from 2013 until now got us to where we are today. With doing a facility utilization study in 2013, we asked the community, what do you want in a senior center? What space do you need and what type of programming do you want? Well, the first thing that came to me is, you need to change your name. And I said, well, no, we're doing a facility utilization study. What do you want? Type of activities and space do you need? And they said, well, we're not walking through that door if you call us aging or seniors. We don't want that.
Right.
So we were able to successfully rebrand our organization. But at the same time, we increased our programs and services. We increased the hours. And we're here today.
Increase the size of the building. A huge.
One of the first initiatives.
Recent years.
We had a data collection software called My Senior Center. So we tracked everybody that came in, what activity they were doing. Mm-hmm. And we were very, very intentional, methodical, and sometimes hounding people. We've got to have you sign in.
Yeah.
It's not that we're trying to see where you are and what you're doing. It helps us program.
Mm-hmm.
Data is so important. And what we found out is that in 2018 and 2019, we were running out of room. And we showed evidence in that. We showed pictures of that. And so when we went for a capital campaign silently, we were able to raise $1.6 million, which is half of the $3 million we wanted to. So in August of 2019, we decided to move forward. We staged and started our renovation expansion in March of 2020. We're going to do it all throughout being open, but then COVID hit, so we were closed.
Yeah.
So we were able to get it done instead of renovations being over 2.5 years, 3 years. And it took, 15 months?
Yeah. So in that sense, maybe a bit of a blessing in disguise.
It was. And we had ordered all the supplies, so our costs were 12% under what the original cost bid was.
You talk about all of the services that you provide, and again, beyond the traditional quote-unquote senior center. I mean, again, for those in that transition period. And I wonder, when you look at that big picture, Does 50 North always get credit for the benefit that you provide for quality of life in the community, contributing quality of life? That's such a big buzzword these days when you talk about economic development and just, you know, quality of life is so very important. Is it sometimes forgotten that that's a big part of what you do?
It is. And I mean, the story that I go back to, and I want to thank Jane and Gary Heminger for really believing in us. But the reason they believed in us is when Jane's parents moved from Tiffin to Findlay, she connected her parents with then the Agency on Aging.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefits that she saw and the friendships that her parents made. We're also seeing, not only in that instance, we're seeing a lot of parents who are coming to Findlay who never lived here, but their kids are here. They want to grow up their grandkids, and they get connected to our organization and make new friends, whether it be on a trip, on a travel, or they're having lunch, or they're doing a workout class together. They're coming together or having coffee, just sitting around or reading a book. We just see so many new connections, and we want to have that welcoming environment that anybody is welcome, and that we're all going to embrace one another.
We mentioned your reaction, what this designation as Ohio Senior Center of the Year, what that means for you. I would imagine when you got the word, a lot of high fives and whoopees around the office.
You know, it is such a tribute, as I said, to our board of trustees, our staff, and our volunteers who make what we are. And this is an award for them, because it takes all of us, and we all work together. We don't say, that's not my job. If someone needs something, we jump in. If we don't have the answer, we're going to help them find it.
Yeah. And what does this mean to those that you serve, the members of the community that you serve?
We hear testimonials daily. We get thank yous from our staffs do. Our custodians come back and tell us how much they appreciate how clean they're keeping this facility. Or if they need something, they go and get it. Or if they have a question and they can't answer, they connect. So all of our, whether it's member services with Leslie Smith and her team, or Erica with activities or wellness with Francie, or chores with Ray and his team, or outreach with Kim Hyatt and her team. Everybody just is grateful to do what they do.
And
they love it.
And it validates what you're doing with the community, and kind of motivates you to continue to do more with the...
We definitely, our best ideas come from our members, and our limitations are our resources. Well, you know, Findlay and Hancock County have great resources.
Yeah.
So we really tap into it. And anytime that we're talking to someone who's brand new to our organization, they're like, oh, we bring them in. They're like, oh, what can I do?
Yeah.
So I think it's something where you have to come in and experience, what it feels like when you come in.
Yeah, a true gem in the community. Again, maybe sometimes overlooked or taken for granted, but it's a recognition like this that reminds us just how important it is. 50 North being named Ohio's Senior Center of the Year, and Executive Director Carolyn Kopas with us this morning. Congratulations. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks so much.
So last week, we got a couple of important reports on the labor market, on jobs, the JOLTS report, job openings and labor turnover numbers, early in the week. And then to finish up the week, the Labor Department's February jobs report was released. And both really showed continuation of the story that we've been hearing for quite some time now. More jobs created, plenty of employment opportunities. For a couple of years now, we've heard in the news, and it seems like it's all we've been hearing, is that jobs are everywhere. Companies can't find enough people. The only people who don't have a job are the ones that don't want to work. Right? We've all heard that. Well, that's not really the whole story. When people who are out of work hear things like that, it'll be pretty demoralizing. What about those who have lost their jobs? There have certainly been firings and downsizing by companies post-pandemic. In January, job cuts actually accelerated to their highest clip since March of 2023, and more layoffs may be coming as investor pressure and the pivot toward artificial intelligence accelerates. So it's a very complicated job market and labor market out there. So if you are just waking up to another week without a job, the numbers in the news may be little comfort. And joining us this morning is career consultant and business analyst Eno Eka. She is CEO of Eni Consulting and the Business Analysis School. And a job loss can certainly be emotionally challenging for many. It's probably not helped when we hear all of these platitudes about all the jobs that are out there. And hey, if you're not working, you probably don't want to work, which is not true for many. So talk about why it is important to, first and foremost, if you find yourself displaced, to take time to process those emotions.
Absolutely, it is. It is important to process those emotions. Losing a job can be a significant loss, impacting one's sense of identity and financial security. So taking time to acknowledge and process those feelings is essential for mental well-being and, of course, to pave way for a more positive job search process.
So you take some time, you kind of decompress, deal with those emotions, and then obviously you got to get back out there and get into the job market, maybe for the first time in quite a while. That means updating. Yeah. That means updating one's resume. What strategies should someone use, especially in this day and age?
So after a job loss, which we know is not a great thing, it's crucial for you to tailor your resume to showcase your skills and accomplishments relevant to your desired role. Maybe you had wanted to even move into a new role, and that might be your new opportunity to do that. So highlight your latest skills and accomplishments and make sure that you put it into quantifiable results, and make sure your resume stands out to potential employers. So dust up your resume, update it, and start putting it out there.
You know, there's an old saying that when you're on the beach, the phone never rings, meaning when you're out of a job, when you're out of a job, people tend to not call about new jobs. Is that such a taboo thing anymore? I mean, it used to be you go into a job interview, you didn't want to tell them you were out of work. But is that sort of the taboo thing anymore?
That is no longer a taboo. And the opposite is happening right now. Because everyone knows about the current job market, people throw a lot of support behind you once you share your job loss. What I recommend to people is, one, going back to your network. It is invaluable after your job loss. Tell your colleagues, your friends, your industry contacts. Make a post on LinkedIn and tell them you're open to work and open to recommendations. And see all those referrals start pouring in. So make sure that no matter where you are right now, you're building and maintaining professional relationships, because you never know how your network can support you when you need them the most.
We always talk about networking as being so important to help you advance your career and help you out in your job. It certainly can be a big help when you're out of work as well. And so kind of interesting, something to remember, that it's not something you want to necessarily hide from people, that you are actually looking for work these days. Obviously, when you are unemployed, then you're going to have an awful lot of time on your hands. How do folks use that time productively?
Well, being unemployed, not a great thing, but with all that time on your hands, it's time for you to upskill and retrain. Go get those new certifications that you have been postponing for years. Take an online course. Start to volunteer in your community. Join an association. Volunteer, give back some time so that you don't have, so you still have experience on your resume, even though you're not actively working. And that also makes you more competitive in the market. And you share that with your network and people see that you're giving back. People want to support you even more. So get new certifications, take online courses, upskill, and volunteer.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point you make. I mean, these are things that you can actually put on your resume to make you a stronger job candidate. So it's not just about filling your time and taking your mind off of it. It is actually about making yourself more employable to your next employer. And obviously, for a lot of folks, the longer this goes on, the more difficult it can be to stay positive. We've all heard that expression that one door closes, another door opens. And that's easy to have that mindset at first, but the longer it goes, more depressive thoughts can set in. How do we maintain that positive mindset if it's been a while?
Yeah, so maintaining a positive mindset is really key during a job search. I recommend setting realistic goals and timelines for yourself, staying organized. Might be time to look through, your personal life, and just staying organized so you're ready for the next opportunity. Practice self-care during this period to help you manage your stress. Make sure you sleep. I also recommend having just a positive outlook to help you increase your resilience as you go through your job search effectiveness and strategy. But I also recommend, like, for people who have moved out of home, like, spend time with friends and family during this time. That positivity, the encouragement, their support is definitely going to be helpful for you during this job search period.
Lastly, again, we're talking mostly to people who find themselves out of work and, some of the strategies for getting back out there. But really, everybody should be paying attention to this because, as we said, we're likely to see more corporate downsizing in the months to come. So even if somebody is not out of work now, there's a possibility that you may be somewhere on down the line. So maybe some of these things to start thinking about now proactively.
Absolutely.
Again, Anno Ekka is CEO of Annie Consulting and the Business Analysis School, career consultant and business analyst. Where can we get more information, Anno?
Yeah, to learn more about my services as a career coach, you can visit businessanalysisschool.com. We have free sessions. We have paid sessions. to support anyone who has probably had a job loss. We have a lot of opportunities to assist them in their job search. So don't hesitate to reach out. Also follow me on LinkedIn. My name is Eno Eka on LinkedIn, E-N-O-E-K-A. I post a lot of, job search strategies. I share a lot about new career opportunities and how to navigate your job search, which I know that anyone who needs that will find, resourceful.
Eno, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Now, this is one of the more unusual thefts that we have ever had in the broken news, and we've had some pretty unusual thefts, but this one really raises an eyebrow. Two Texas men are facing charges after allegedly stealing a whole lot of calculators from several stores in Minnesota. The value of the stolen calculators. What is this? 1976? The value of the stolen calculators was around $20,000. How many calculators do you have to steal to get a value of $20,000? I mean, honestly, does anybody buy calculators anymore? I mean, we've got a calculator app on our phone. I don't know anyone who actually owns a separate calculator anymore. I can't imagine there's this big black market for hot calculators. Investigators believe the men are part of a larger theft ring in Texas that may have stolen $25 million in calculators around the U.S. Again, we're talking calculators. What? $25 million in calculators? That would lead me to believe that that would encompass every calculator in the U.S. I mean, how many can there possibly be? If convicted, that, and here's the thing about the story, they're from Texas, but they were arrested in Minnesota for pilfering the calculators there. So they at least were smart enough to go out of state, you know. thinking maybe they'd get away with that. If convicted, the men could face up to 10 years in prison. So calculate that. $20,000 in calculators. Okay. I'd have to say that one thing I've never encountered, anybody coming up to me on the street saying, "Hey, want to buy a calculator? Got one going cheap." What are you going to do with all of these? I don't know. Elsewhere in the broken news. Now, this is pretty bizarre. A bakery in Long Island, New York, accused of passing off Dunkin' Donuts as their own and possibly putting some of their customers at risk while doing so. State and county inspectors are now investigating the Savory Fig Bakery. This is in Long Island, New York. The Savory Fig Bakery, after a customer posted photos of the supposed vegan and gluten-free donuts that she bought from the bakery, at least one of which appeared to have D-shaped sprinkles on them. And if you ever go to Dunkin', you know that's what they're famous for, their D-shaped sprinkles. And this donut from the Savory Fig had the D-shaped sprinkles. So, the theory is that donut may have come from Dunkin', and if so, it contains both wheat and dairy, because Dunkin' Donuts do. But this was sold as a vegan and gluten-free donut, and obviously that could pose a risk to some vegan and gluten-free customers. So, could be in a lot of trouble for passing off Dunkin' Donuts as their own. It's kind of bizarre. Finally, and how many years has this been in the news off and on, that controversial $1.7 million public toilet in San Francisco. Now, you've heard about this story, right? This has been in the news, again, off and on for several years now. And finally, that controversial public toilet with a $1.7 million price tag has been delivered now to its final place of installation in San Francisco after multiple setbacks and a public outcry over the cost of the single-stall modular facility. It was offloaded, I guess, over the weekend in Noe Valley and will be installed soon. After coming under fire for the cost, city officials changed their minds about purchasing the toilet. However, two outside vendors stepped up to offer to cover the expense, and now it is being installed at absolutely no cost to the city. So they're getting their $2 million toilet, but it's not costing taxpayers a dime. I love it when a story has a happy ending. I'm thinking it's going to be a tourist attraction. You know that there are going to be people who just have to visit the $2 million toilet in San Francisco because it's been so much in the news. A couple of other items from the broken news this morning. This is another thing, and it seems to me that we have had this guy in the broken news before. He just cannot seem to stay out of trouble. Green Bay police in Wisconsin have arrested a man named D's Nuts. This guy's been in the news before, right? That's a name that you just don't forget. And it's not the first time I've seen that in a news report. So I'm guessing this guy has gone afoul of the law before. But apparently, earlier this month, D's Nuts Kroll is his full name. D's Nuts Lee Kroll was allegedly involved in an altercation with two other men and brandished a firearm, which turned out to be a BB gun, but still a firearm nonetheless. Ms. Kroll's Wisconsin ID card identifies him by the legal name D's Nuts Lee Kroll. Authorities say he was talking in circles when they tried to interview him about the incident. He is being charged with battery and disorderly conduct. D's Nuts. Back in the news. Something of a broken news celebrity here. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a story out of Florida. As Florida-based stories in the broken news go, this is actually kind of mild. But you got to wonder about, maybe this guy's got a screw loose someplace. Josh D. I don't know his full last name. He's just identified as Josh D. in the report. He lives in Florida. And he has collected, are you ready for this? 2,682 VHS tapes of James Cameron's 1997 epic, Titanic. Yes, that's right. He has nearly 3,000 copies of the movie Titanic on VHS. I'm not sure which is crazier. The guys who were stealing $2.5 million worth of calculators nationwide, or this guy who's got nearly 3,000 VHS tapes of Titanic. He said he was inspired by his father's Star Wars memorabilia collection, and he wanted one of his own, so he latched onto Titanic. Josh has been helped on his mission by people sending him their tapes from countries including Australia, Germany, Japan, and Taiwan. Says Josh, quote, "I am pleased to say I have the largest documented collection of Titanic VHS tapes." Everybody needs a hobby, I guess. And if you think amassing nearly 3,000 copies of Titanic on videotape is impressive, well, that is just the tip of the iceberg, no pun intended. Josh also owns an authenticated piece of an original deck chair from the infamously doomed ship. He says he hopes to create at some point some sort of traveling museum where he can tour the country with his Titanic collection. Alrighty then. There you go. That is your broken news report this morning. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
Now the 1-0-2 Ramirez. Swung on, hit in the air, deep center. On the run is Carter. Looking up, it is high off the 19-foot wall in center. Hosey in with an RBI double.
Hear a select schedule of spring training games, all leading up to the season opener on Thursday, March 28th at Oakland. Your home of the Guardians is 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. They call it Hollywood's biggest night. Last night, the Oscars were handed out, the Academy Awards for the year's best in movies. And I thought this was kind of interesting. On the other side of the entertainment coin, when it comes to television, majority of Americans, according to new data from MarketCast, this is a report in Variety, the entertainment newspaper. Majority of Americans, when it comes to TV, want to see characters with the same issues that they are dealing with on a daily basis. They want to see characters struggling with the same issues that they are dealing with. 84% say that they want to watch TV shows that accurately portray the struggles of work-life balance and everyday family issues. 84%. And this was kind of interesting. They didn't, it wasn't a traditional survey per se. They analyzed conversations that TV viewers were having on social media about the shows that they liked and didn't like and why they liked certain characters in certain shows. And they noticed that viewers really respond when the themes of work, family, parenting, and caregiving were represented on screen. On those topics, the biggest, the series that get the biggest thumbs up from viewers, Abbott Elementary, Grey's Anatomy, and The Conners. Kind of interesting. I mean, even if you're not a teacher or a doctor, you know, Abbott Elementary and Grey's Anatomy, they speak to universal themes that everyone can relate to. And The Conners, of course, has always been a blue-collar targeted show. Also singled out were the Netflix dramas Virgin River and Maid, as well as Fleischman on FX. Fleischman is in Trouble on FX, and the acclaimed HBO show Insecure. So those were kind of at the top of the list. The think tank New America commissioned the study, and the organization says the findings can be a catalyst for policy and culture change in the U.S. Well, I don't know about that, but certainly it speaks to, we want to see realistic portrayals of human challenges the TV shows that we watch. I don't know. Would you agree with that? Or do you go to television for escape from all of those? I think there's a fair number of people. I mean, I hear what the data is saying, but I still think there's a fair number of people who go to TV shows, their favorite shows, as kind of escapism. Certainly in the movies, but even on TV, I think. There is a certain desire for some escape, some level of escapism. So in case you didn't realize it, last week was 4-H week, and we are joined this morning with an update on Hancock County 4-H programs and the OSU Extension. Lauren Berner Kitzler is with us from Extension. Reminder that there is still time to sign up. We'll get to that here in just a bit as well. Talk a little bit about 4-H week, big week celebrating all of the 4-H'ers.
It was, yes. So good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me, and good morning, listeners. So yes, 4-H week was last week. It was March 3rd through the 9th, and not only was it Hancock County, but it was also Ohio State 4-H week. Mm-hmm. So here in Hancock County locally, we had an arrangement of activities every day. I want to give a shout out to our sewing group, our sewing educator, Joyce Schroeder. Her and some sewing kiddos that in Hancock County went together and made baby blankets and burp cloths to help recognize any baby born during 4-H week at the time of at Blanchard Valley here.
There we go.
So that was super exciting. Very we cool. also hosted a open house, which we were able to pull in some several new families and members from the county. So it's exciting to help improve our numbers on that. But each day we had something different that you could post on our Facebook. You could wear green on Tuesday. So mm-hmm. just little fun activities to help support 4-H week.
So, yeah, anything that you might have noticed going on last week involving 4-H, that was the reason. And it's interesting, you mentioned the open house. And I remember last month when we were talking about that coming up and reminding, and it's worth pointing out again that 4-H is more than just farm kids and rural kids.
It is, absolutely. And at the open house, we had an arrangement of about 15 county 4-H clubs come and set up. So mm-hmm. there was cookie decorating. There was promoting sunflower seeds, making it out of a glove, putting a little soil in a plastic latex glove. Making a little mini sunflower kit. There was a little face painting. There was making a critter from an arrangement of crafts items that we had, from glue sticks to pipe cleaners. So there's much more to 4-H than most people think, rather than livestock.
And yeah, as beyond livestock and sewing and food preparation, all of that is important. But I mean, in recent years, you branched out into the more and more into the STEM subjects and things of that nature, even robotics and all
yes,
of that.
So STEM is up and coming. It is a up and coming exciting project. There's a lot to go into STEM. So here at the open house, we had a STEM station where we had Indy cars, where we had 3D pens, which is very similar to a hot glue gun. But the kiddos can come up, they can make and design something, and then it turns into 3D. That is something that, we're getting into the schools and promoting our 3D pens, our robots. So
you,
very exciting.
You have some things coming up involving your school programs, too, to talk about.
We do. Yep. So here coming up the 1st of April, we're going to really be hitting Chick Quest, which is my favorite school program because it teaches chick embryology to second and third graders. We are in about 4 schools right now, but we're always looking for more. But it's just an exciting time because you get to see, from the start of the egg to the little baby chick, 21 days later hatching out. So it's very exciting.
Very cool for second and third, so 7, 8-year-olds, right?
Yeah,
in that range. That's really cool. So yeah. I'm sure that they're just fascinated by all of that.
Oh, you should see the smiles on their face. It's great because, we place the eggs in the incubator. And normally I have the teachers have each egg numbered to kind of go with a kid so that we can kind of follow that egg throughout the time.
Follow your chick.
Yep. Yeah. We come in about 3 to 4 times throughout the classroom, and we do candling where you can see if there's a chick in there. We kind of explain the history, going back if a chick doesn't make it, mm-hmm. which can very well happen.
Right.
But seeing the end product of they follow that egg from day 1 to day 21. And you have a little chick of your own.
Very cool. As we mentioned, there is still time to sign up for 4-H programs. And again, this is open to all within the county. Give us all of the details that people need to know.
Absolutely. So, 4-H enrollment is open until April 1st. That's kind of our big day. And just a reminder, it is open to anyone 8 years old and in the third grade. So you have to be 8 and in the third grade. It's kind of a little tricky, but... And then let's say you're not necessarily quite that age yet or in third grade. We have a great program called Clover Buds. Mm-hmm. Clover Buds requirement is 5 years old and in kindergarten. So it's kind of that one step just a little bit below our 4-H program. But our county Clover Buds do a lot of activities. We have a graduation. We have a one-day Clover Bud day camp for these kiddos. And then they meet every other month and get to travel around different places here in Hancock County. So...
One of the things that I think is important to point out, you say you need to be 8 years old and in third grade in order to join, but you don't necessarily have to join at that point. If you've got a fourth grader, fifth grader, into junior high or even high school.
Absolutely, you can join at any time. The minimum requirement is just being that 8-year-old. So if you are in sixth grade and you are 13, 14, yeah, absolutely. We are welcoming all members of any age.
So. And as we said, all kinds of different programs for whatever interest there may be. If somebody is curious about 4-H, not sure what whether there's a program to match their interests, there probably is, but how do you learn more about that? How do you find out?
So there's a couple of things. You can, one, follow us on our Hancock County 4-H Facebook page. You could also come into our office. So we have our examples of our project books laid out at all times for members to come in and just start thinking about it. You know, if you're really like, I really want to join this program, but I don't necessarily know where to start, what do I do? Come on in, come see us. You can get some hands-on experience with our STEM stuff. You can get some hands-on experience about seeing our books that we have all laid out by categories. So there's something for everybody.
And again, how do folks get more information and start the process?
So you can contact our office. We are happy to help get you started. Our first step is we kind of connect you to a 4-H club that's within your school district. So that way you kind of are in close abilities, so that way you're not driving across the county. Right. Plus, sometimes being in a club within your school district, you have some friends. It's always better to join a program when you know some friends. Mm-hmm. So we start there. We look at our clubs and seeing if they're accepting members. And then we form that connection between that advisor and our office to help get you started.
All right. Very good. We've got a link on our webpage for more information. 4-H sign up continues through April 1st.
Yep, April 1st. April 1st. Big day.
Okay. Again, Lauren Berner-Kitzler with us this morning from the Hancock County OSU Extension and 4-H program. Lauren, thanks very much for dropping by. As always, we appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. Have a great day.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Just head on over to our little corner of the World Wide Web at goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.